I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A great new book out is Growing Up Young, Coming of Age as the Son of Two Shrinks. It's from the Globe and Mail columnist Micah Toob, who writes a personal memoir that's often funny, sometimes challenging, and deeply personal. As a son of two psychologists, we see the confusions and dysfunctions worked out, worked over, and discussed in this book. Everything from sexual confusion and dysfunction, the dynamic between a parent and a child, a mother and a son, a father and a son, a father and a daughter, as well as the teachings of Young are illustrated and explained in a way that makes this book incredibly engaging. MicahToob.com is the website for more. Growing Up Young is published in Canada by Doubleday and Norton in the United States. In Vancouver this day, please welcome to the Plant Online program, Micah Toob. Good morning, Mr. Toob.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. So before we talk about your book, just you'll indulge me. I know that authors don't like talking about other people's books, but
Certainly I do. Go ahead.
In reading up on you, I read somewhere in an interview you gave another website about the influence the Year of Magical Thinking had on the writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to look it up. I pulled my copy off the shelf the other night, and I was astonished to find out that it's been 5 years since that book came out.
Wow.
And I can't really put my finger on it, but it I mean, I really liked the book when I read it 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And they actually just, a woman just put on a one-person play of that in Toronto.
Yeah, I heard about that. Mm-hmm. And it's astonishing to me how it's had such a life after its publication. I mean, the stuff in it about how to deal with grief is you know, remarkable. But the book itself, I mean, in your case, it's had an impact in how you've crafted your own book, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, and it's been 5 years since I read it, but I just got this real sense that what Joan Didion was doing in that book was, wasn't writing a kind of one-textured or one-toned book. I mean, it's a horrible thing that happened. Her daughter and her husband both died in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's a lot about grief, but she approaches it from so many different angles. Sometimes she talks about it scientifically, sometimes she talks about it and how she navigated the medical institution, and then sometimes it's about the sort of delusions that she was having, which is the magical thinking, and then sometimes she just talks about it emotionally, and sometimes it's funny. Mm-hmm. And so when I was writing my book, I thought, you know, should I just write it as this kind of funny thing, making fun of Young and my parents, or should it be really earnest and talk about the real emotions and moments that I had with them? And then I realized, you know, I could do something like what I thought she had done, which was created a more textured portrait where you can visit all of these different tones.
Yeah, and as the child of two Jungians, did you always think that you'd write about yourself? I mean, that's what Jung teaches, right, to examine the life?
Yeah, exactly, you know, through different methods, especially actually creativity, often had people doing artwork. And I didn't, actually, one of the very first things I wrote when I was seven, because I'd wanted to be a writer since I was seven, and started then, was a memoir piece. It was actually about getting hit by a car at that time. But after that, I wrote a lot of fiction, and I didn't really think I was going to write about myself. I tried to write a novel when I was about 23, and I got through a lot of it, but then realized it just wasn't any good. And it was so hard. And then a friend of mine said, well, you know, what would be easier? And I thought, well, writing about my own life. And as it turns out, writing about one's own life is not easy. But it got me started. And, yeah, I guess, you know, I've always been telling a lot of these stories because I guess they're sort of odd and entertaining. So they were already kind of all in my mind.
Well, what do you think Young teaches us about our lives?
I mean, one of the most important things that kind of goes through a lot of what he talks about is that our relationships with other people have a lot to do with the way we see ourselves or with the content in ourselves. So I think he teaches us to become better people, actually, or to become kind of more aware of who we are and for instance, be less judgmental of other people by, for instance, like looking into ourselves to see what, you know, might be causing the judgment. It's a lot of looking at yourself, which he did a lot. You know, he was a very introverted person. So I think he can teach people to kind of grow as people by reflecting more about themselves.
And throughout the book, you're fairly conversant on the subject of Jung and his teachings. Is that something, because your parents who did what they did for a living, that you knew all along, or was this research as part of the book, perhaps?
It's kind of a mixture. I mean, there were some things that I learned, well, actually quite a lot of things that I learned as I was growing up. One time I was playing basketball with my dad, and he was explaining the concept of synchronicity to me, you know, the idea that things happen outside of you that reflect your psyche. That was when I was 9 or something. And then, you know, when I was 7, my mother told me that I had this sun inside of me, which was my spirit guide, which, you know, Jung felt that he had one as well. So there are these things that happened as I was a child, and I learned about them kind of through experience versus through theory, you know? And so it was during the writing of this book that I got some more of the theory side of it. So it kind of, I guess, completed my knowledge of Jung. I was able to almost reflect or analyze the ways that I'd learned about these concepts as a child.
You know, I just realized there may be people listening to us who you know, like myself, who've never been to a therapist, never seen a psychiatrist or shrink. And there are sort of two schools of thought, are there? There's Jung and there's Freud?
Yeah, I mean, those are two of the main ones, you know.
Yeah.
Freud and Jung used to be friends, and actually Jung was Freud's, I guess, student and crown prince. He was his protege. He was supposed to carry on Freudian psychoanalysis after Freud retired. But of course, what happened, their split was basically caused by the fact that Freud, you know, as we all know, was sort of obsessed with his sex theory, this idea that everything that happens is, you know, repressed sexuality. And Jung felt there was kind of, I don't know, like more mystical or supernatural things going on. So, you know, Jung was the person who coined the term collective unconscious. He thought that we were passed down these memories from, like, past ancestors. And, Freud was just like, that's all complete crap, you know, none of that's true. And so it ended up kind of splitting them up. And but I think Freud kind of persisted a little bit longer, and he influences, therapy more today.
We tend to think that the psychiatrists, because they give the rest of us therapy, wisdom perhaps, that they understand life better than the rest of us. Thus, their lives probably are a lot better than ours. But when you read this book, we realize that you're no better than the rest of us.
Thank you. It's funny. It's funny because one of the great ironies about my parents, you know, because they were, you know, always talking about relationships and figuring out the proper dynamics of family and all that, and of course then they get divorced, right, when I'm 12, so it's so ironic in a way, and they've both been married 3 times. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because you can't ever escape your own life, your own problems. You know, you can't actually analyze yourself in a way. I mean, you can to some extent, but, you know, my parents, for instance, one example I give in the book is that, you know, my mother was trying to help me by using some of her therapy techniques sometimes, and occasionally it was too much. But in a way, she was just being like any other mother, you know, over-mothering. So yeah, I mean, they are the same. As we were just basically a normal family.
Yeah, and just as dysfunctional.
Just as dysfunctional, and them being therapists just kind of made it. What I often like to think of is that as we were going through the dysfunctions, and as I was going through my dysfunctions growing up, there was this meta level, you know, it was like talking about it. So not only was I going through it, but I was getting this sort of almost like the DVD extra commentary on top of it.
Yeah.
So it makes me, for instance, I now write this relationship column for the Globe and Mail because it's something that I've been thinking about for a long time, relationships and psychology.
Yeah, and do you think the introspection helps? Like, do you think, you yourself, I know you're not a therapist, but, I mean, you have this background in it. Do you think you know yourself better? Do you know who you are?
I don't know, actually, if that's true. Sometimes when I, for instance, go on dates with women now, they'll say, you know, it's great that you can talk about this stuff, but I don't actually know, I don't personally know yet if talking about something means to really know about something. I mean, I think that I'm just learning about myself at the same pace as everyone else is, and maybe I have this commentary going on top of it. I think it's possible, you know, just to give myself a little credit, that being self-reflective has made me be a better person sometimes to other people. But it's hard for me to say. You know, I was just divorced 2 years ago, and I go through all of the same problems that everyone does. And I think that it's just a different, you know, I wouldn't want to not be able to think about this stuff, but I can get a little too much in my head sometimes. And I have to remind myself just to enjoy my life.
Yeah, and do you think people, after writing this book, are people reticent in hanging out with you, say, going out with you, because they're afraid that it'll be fodder for another book or a column?
It's funny. No one seems to have said that. And I don't know if it's just willful delusion or blocking it out or repression. But, I have a lot of ethics around writing about people. For instance, for my column, I would never write about someone if they hadn't given me the approval to do it.
Yeah.
And in the book, obviously, it's different because it's my family. I think in some ways you sort of, I don't know how to put it, like almost own that a little bit more, those stories. It's my childhood. I think even though I had to include my family in it, you know, and I did talk about it as with them as I was writing it, but I think my father did ask me recently when the tape recorder goes off.
Yeah, what? How did they react to your writing this book?
Well, my mother was kind of supportive throughout the whole thing and just said, you know, just do it. You just need to do what you need to do, which is actually very therapeutic oriented, I think, in a way. You know, just, you know, that she realized that it was my own process that I was going through and didn't really have to do with her. Although some of the things I brought up in the book about, for instance, how much she would try to analyze me, it ignited a conversation about how appropriate that was. So in some ways it actually helped our relationship. And with my father, he was a little bit more protective of his privacy. And he was upset at the beginning, and he thought that, you know, like he said, he kind of used his Jungian terms to describe how he felt. He said that I might be writing it from my unconscious, and so, you know, I might not have control over what I was writing. Was actually what he was saying. And I was just like, well, that's what writers do, you know? And so we had this conversation, and he was worried, but then once he read the book, he realized that it was a balanced portrait, and so he was sort of quelled at that point.
And they read it as you went along, right?
Well, there were points at which I gave it to them. I realized I sort of showed them the beginning stages outline, and then I realized after a while that I couldn't include them in the whole process of writing. In fact, Jung would probably say that is like a terrible thing. You know, you need to be able to tell your own story without someone else guiding you at that point. And so I did show it to them before it was published.
Yeah, and as the writer, while you're doing it, do you self-censor? I mean, and then after you're done with it, were there parts that you took out because you were sensitive to something that they were concerned about?
Yeah, there was. There were some things that I didn't include in the book because I felt that it was over the line as far as their own privacy. I think that's healthy to have those boundaries. And I tried to focus a little bit more on myself, too, in this book, instead of, you know, well, judging them or whatever. And so there's some things. And also, my editor helped me. She felt, you know, if I was ever going almost like, it's kind of weird to say that there could be something like TMI, you know, like too much information in a book like this. But
yeah,
she would say, you know, you could pull back a little bit here. So I was negotiating that kind of thing.
Well, I talk to a lot of authors of memoirs, and that always strikes me about you people, is that that you tend to talk about your lives or tell things about your lives that maybe I wouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
and maybe a lot of people wouldn't have. And there's a lot of this in this book that I wouldn't have gone there. For you, is it easy to talk about yourself?
No, that's the weird thing, is I guess, you know, on a personal level it is. I tend to be quite open with people quite quickly, maybe more quickly than some people. And with my friends, you know, I'm just totally open with them, and I will talk about anything. And I guess when I was writing this book, when I was going into it, I didn't quite realize how confessional it was going to eventually become. And as I was writing it, I started to get really uncomfortable with that, and I actually couldn't even imagine it being published and people reading it. So there was this weird conjunction at this time when I wasn't sure that I was ready for what I was actually doing. And then luckily what happened at that time was I started writing the column in the Globe and Mail, and I was able to start, because the columns are similar to my book, where there'll be a little bit of personal information, research, talking to friends, and I got to start trying it out little by little, each column, and I got a little bit more comfortable with that. And in the end, I think that it's my purpose in some way. I mean, as a writer, and I think even if you write fiction, it's your purpose to tell your truth, and I'm just doing that as nonfiction, and it's a decision I've made. I've always known in a way that I wanted to do it, so I'm going for it, you know, and I'm just going to, I guess, face the consequences if there are any.
Has it been a catharsis for you?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, it was a huge step forward in my kind of awareness of my own life, the way I felt about my parents. It got, I guess, I don't know the technical definition of catharsis, but I think it's partially some of your angst, you kind of unload it, and I think that happened. I think I really kind of moved forward quite a bit, became, I mean, in a way, you know, it's funny because the title is Growing Up Young, and young means young in German, but I think that I kind of became a real adult through writing the book.
And talking about it, going on this book tour and talking to people who've read it, mm-hmm. That must be something on its own, just as much as writing it, is it?
Talking about it, it's interesting because, it adds like a whole another layer, right, onto the book. I wrote it, you know, and at some point, I think Kevin Patterson, an author friend of mine, once said, books are never finished, they're abandoned. And you do kind of get that sense when you're a writer that you could just, like, keep reanalyzing and adding more. And it was kind of hard to let it go, but actually talking about it allows me to do that in a way.
Is therapy for everyone? Like I mentioned that I've never right. gone myself. Do you think everyone can get something out of it? Do you think it's constructive?
I think so. I really don't see how therapy could not be helpful. Although you can have a bad therapist, and I've had friends who've had some bad therapists. You do have to find the right person for you. I don't think it's absolutely necessary. And actually, Jung himself used to say that if you have something in your life, like say religion, like if you're a very religious person, that can replace therapy. And I think in a modern day sort of more secular context, there could be other things like devotion to, you know, an artistic pursuit or even sports or, you know, I mean, there could be other ways that you think about these things while you're not realizing you're doing it. So I don't think it's necessary, but I think it's definitely helpful for everyone.
Is it like a religion for you?
Therapy?
Or Jung?
Sometimes I think of Jung as being kind of like my religion in the way that I didn't choose it. And, you know, you don't, like, I'm actually Jewish, but I didn't choose to be Jewish, you know? Mm. And I didn't choose to have my parents be Jungians. So, you know, the religion that you grow up in informs the way that you think about ethics and think about your behavior, and definitely Jung has influenced those things. As to whether I still practice, I'm kind of like, sometimes I think of myself as like a non-practicing Jungian, mm-hmm. or maybe semi-practicing Jungian.
And part of Jung is to analyze one's dreams. Do you do that all the time? Like, I used to have a friend in elementary school who told me that his parents encouraged him to keep a dream journal, and I thought, mm-hmm. even at the time, I thought it was sort of crackerjack. But it does serve a purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, when you think about it, like, dreams are so interesting and weird, and they're really unexplainable. And but they're these great stories that basically come from your own mind. And so why wouldn't you look at them? And I think that there's a lot of different ways of looking at your dreams. I think any way that you look at them is valid. And I actually, I did, for a while, I used to wake up every morning and write my dreams, and I started to kind of work it into some of the fiction that I was writing. So I sort of married, in a way, two of my interests, dreams and writing. So I did that, and that was my way of thinking about the dreams. So I don't always analyze them in a psychoanalytic or Jungian way. In fact, occasionally I feel like that gets kind of tiresome. But I like talking about the dreams.
And do you dream often? Like, one would think that if you have this journal next to the bed, that you're probably dreaming a lot, thus you have to write everything down.
That, yeah, during that period when I would wake up every morning and work the dreams into this fiction I was writing, I had a dream every night. It was crazy.
Yeah.
You often hear that. It kind of builds on itself. Like, somehow your mind knows, yeah, that it's going to need to remember the dream or something. But I'd say over the last month, I've remembered one or two of my dreams.
Yeah. You mentioned that you'd worked on this novel at the age of 23. Do you think you'll ever publish a novel?
Well, I do. I'm writing a novel now.
Yeah.
There's a higher degree of chance that this one will work out than the last one. So I've definitely I'm moving now to fiction. I don't know if that means I'll never write nonfiction again, but I'm enjoying it as a kind of different process, a little bit freer.
And I mentioned off the top that the book is published simultaneously in Canada and in the United States. Do you think the audiences in either country, do you think they'll take to the book differently?
That's an interesting question. My former brother-in-law thought that Canadians were a little bit more introspective. I've lived in Canada for the last 10 years. It's hard for me to say whether that's true. I have that sense, though, that maybe if you were to analyze the countries from a Jungian way, that Canada might be more introverted. So my book is maybe weighted a little bit more towards that kind of personality. So maybe I think it could be received better in Canada than in the States, but of course I hope it does well in the States.
Yeah, yeah. How often are you in the paper?
So the column comes out every other week, and there's one this Friday, which is about men's relationship with feminism, and then the one will come out 2 weeks after that, Friday.
Yeah. Micah, this is a great book and a fine achievement for a first book. Congratulations on it. Good luck with it.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. The website for more is micatube.com. The book is called Growing Up Young, Coming of Age as the Son of Two Shrinks. It's published by Doubleday. The column biweekly in the Globe and Mail. Micah Tube on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.